Radio Borders Youth Association. Good afternoon, everyone. You listen to the sound of universal compassion. We will continue listen to Tangent's previous program with the book Way of Life by Shanti Davies. Please enjoy.
This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3 or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association. Respectful, beneficial, empowering. Hello and welcome to this series of programs in which we are talking about anger and its antidote, patience. Since beginningless time, we've been under the influence of emotional states which just confuse us and bring us ongoing suffering. Many of us think that we have a kind of indelible character or personality, which at some basic level we can't really change, and we see other people in the same light. We might say, Mary's such an angry person, as though Mary has this inherent character which always manifests itself in angry ways. But from a Buddhist point of view, we do not exist like that at all. It may seem that we have an inbuilt kind of character, but that's only because we've become so accustomed over a long period of time to certain ways of reacting that they now have become automatic. They appear to be sewn into our psyche. The point is that with effort and determination, we can change anything about the way we act and react that we want to. From a Buddhist point of view, we do not have a permanent inherent self. What we are is a coming together of many factors, without an independent core at the center of them all. So although we may have repeated a certain learned behavior so many times over so many lifetimes that it appears to be our very nature, it is still actually just like a storm cloud in the sky. That cloud might appear to be overbearing and menacing, but with the right conditions and enough wind, it will quickly melt away. Similarly, given the right conditions and enough effort and determination, we can change or eliminate anything about ourselves we wish to. This understanding is the basis of our talks in these programs, in which we are looking at Shantideva's Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life and various commentaries on it. We are currently on the sixth chapter, the chapter on developing patience. But before we go further with Shantideva's text, let's as usual set a very positive motivation for participating in this program. The best motivation, of course, is to attain enlightenment so we can be the greatest benefit to all beings in a state of dissatisfaction and misery. But if you can't set that motivation, at least motivate to become liberated from all suffering for yourself. Any other motivation is, in comparison, rather futile. If, for instance, we are only intent on some happiness in this life, like getting a good reputation or making some money, the benefit, if there is any, will only last as long as this life, and often much shorter. If we are listening to the program to gain something in a future life, like, say, gathering the virtue necessary for another good human rebirth, we may get what we want, but when that life is finished, where's all the benefit gone? Of course, doing something to get a good human rebirth is a Buddhist motivation, but it is certainly not the best or greatest. And motivating only for the benefit of this life is not even a Buddhist meditation at all. So let's now try to make our participation in this program as meaningful as possible, with as strong a motivation as possible. Thank you. Now, our last program finished on the 21st verse of the chapter, in which Shantideva, perhaps surprisingly, laid out why it is good to go through suffering. Of course, our natural inclination, as soon as even the slightest dissatisfaction arises, is to try to escape it as quickly as possible. But that's not always possible. So why not try to find something positive and beneficial in the suffering experience, instead of having to endure it with a mind filled with complaint and misery? If we can find benefit in it, naturally we will suffer a whole lot less than if we make up and believe an overwhelming tale of woe about it. In the 21st verse, Shantideva says this, if you can remember. Suffering also has its worth. Through sorrow, pride is driven out, and pity or compassion felt for those who wander in samsara. Evil is avoided. Goodness seems delightful. We mentioned last time how leveling a difficult situation can be. For instance, for 30 years, Hosni Mubarak was the president of Egypt and seemed to think he could do whatever he chose. When he was overthrown last year and landed up a sick man in court on charges of corruption and murder, it would have been difficult for him to still see himself more high and mighty than anyone else. He could hardly look at the world with disdain, weakly lying in a bed in a cage in the courtroom, now could he? This is what Shantideva means by saying suffering drives out pride. And then if we understand the nature of cyclic existence, suffering can help us understand the misery of all born into cyclic existence and closely identify with them. It thus helps us to develop compassion for them. In her commentary, No Time to Lose, Pema Chodron writes about a young woman who told her that when her baby died, she felt a deep, deep empathy with all other parents that had lost children. It was, she said, an unexpected blessing of her pain. And how many people go through traumatic situations and come out the other side determined to fight for others facing the same situation? Similarly, when we encounter difficulties, we can turn our mind to others in similar or worse situations and develop compassion for them. And finally, knowing that suffering is caused by negative intentions and actions, experiencing it can teach us to avoid such intentions and actions in the future, to transform our minds, and to make a commitment to only act on positive motivations. Shantideva advises that instead of being overcome by our suffering, we look at it in these ways, and it will not seem so monstrous. Indeed, we may even come to appreciate it. His Holiness the Dalai Lama cautions us, though, that we always have to keep meditations on suffering within context. It's no good if when thinking about suffering, we just become depressed and miserable. If that happens, we have to firmly think about our positive qualities and our spiritual progress so far to give ourselves heart and courage for the practice. His Holiness compares our practice to a seedling. At first, we have to be gentle with it, not giving it too much moisture and light. Later, when it is vigorous and strong, it can be treated more robustly. His Holiness also reminds us that as Buddhists, we should not fall into extremes. Sometimes we need strength in our practice. At other times, we must be gentle. A balanced approach, he says, will take us most skillfully to where we want to go. This then ends the section on developing patience when experiencing discomfort, especially the discomforts of following the spiritual path. From verse 22 to 33, Pema Chodron points out that Shantideva shows us how to develop patience by seeing the complexity of any situation, or, as another master put it, by realizing that the agent is not the culprit. In verse 22, Shantideva says, I'm not angry with my bile and other humors, fertile source of pain and suffering. So why should I resent my fellow creatures, victims too of like conditions? Now, when inanimate objects cause us difficulties, we tend not to get angry with them. Shantideva uses the example of getting sick through an imbalance in the body. Of course, in his day, illness was not explained in terms of viruses and bacteria, but rather as an imbalance of the humors, much in the way as our Western forebears explained it in the Middle Ages. Shantideva says that when we get sick from such an imbalance, we don't get angry with the humors. So why should we get angry with people who are actually controlled by conditions just as the humors are? In other words, people who harm us are driven by their karma and conditions. They are not independent and in control as we might think they are. As the humors get out of balance through conditions, So too, people harm us, not because they particularly want to, but because they are controlled by factors outside of themselves. This being the case, why are we patient with our humors, but impatient with other people? In a more modern example, Pema Chodron uses the example of a branch falling from a tree and hitting us on the head. We could explode emotionally. We could walk on without much reaction. Or we could even laugh and think it a bit of a joke. Our response, she writes, depends on how we've worked with our emotions up to that point. Similarly, how we work with difficult situations in our relationships with other people will depend on how we train our mind, or not, as the case may be. Shantideva then continues in the same vein in verses 23 and 24. For although they are unlooked for, undesired, these ills afflict us all the same. And likewise, although unwanted and unsought, defilements nonetheless are quick to come. Never thinking, now I will be angry, people are impulsively caught up in anger. Irritation likewise comes, though never plans to be experienced. Just as sicknesses arise without us wishing for them, the afflictive emotions arise, although we may not want them at all. Anger just arises, and people react automatically to it. This we know from our own experience. How many times have you found yourself taken over by anger and reacted to it without any further analysis at all? As the text says, we don't think, because this person has done that, I'm going to get angry. Anger arrives quickly and unannounced, and we usually react without very much thought at all. So neither the people nor the afflictive emotions are independent entities. The emotions arise as a result of many factors and conditions not dependent on the choice of the people involved. In fact, we can point to nothing that is not a collection of circumstances and conditions, as Shantideva says in the following verses. Every injury, whatever, the whole variety of evil deeds is brought about by circumstances. None is independent, none autonomous. Conditions, once assembled, have no thought that now they will give rise to some result. And that which is engendered does not think that it has been produced by such conditions. And neither does their product have the intention to be produced. As we indicated at the beginning of the program, nothing is independent at all. Neither pain from inanimate objects nor pain for animate objects arises without depending on conditions. But those conditions have no intention to bring about any result. The result just comes about due to the nature of the conditions. So another person's harm, for instance, doesn't come about just of its own accord or through the intention of that person. That person is overtaken by ill will and hatred and not acting according to their own self. And even the ill will or hatred depends on a whole raft of conditions and circumstances. Even the ill will has no intention to arise. Nor do those conditions have any intention about their result, or even about producing a result. Nor does the result have the intention to arise. It just all automatically happens. So we can see that both animate and inanimate objects are the same when it comes to harm. Both are governed by conditions which themselves have no intention to cause harm. His Holiness says that another person's harm to us comes from a whole causal chain we are usually not aware of. We think that the harm is localized and intended, so get angry. But it is just not so. Pema Chodron has a bit of a pitiful example here. She writes, I once stayed with a friend whose dog has an uncontrollable fear of brooms. Just getting the broom out of the closet and starting to sweep sends the poor creature into a tailspin. Although he is no longer in danger of being harmed, he still reacts with terror. You can't convince a dog not to be afraid of brooms, but you can work with your mind and its phobias. She says we all have our brooms and may never know what happened to us in the past to trigger our responses. But we can work in the present moment to transform our mind and develop patience. We don't have to spend a lifetime building up a case about the badness of brooms or the wrongness of our emotions, she says. Well, I don't know about not being able to convince dogs about the benevolence of brooms, but she makes a valid point about not reacting with our usual conditioned responses. Let's take another example. Say you're driving along the motorway and another car comes zooming up the lane beside you and cuts in front of you. How do you react? Of course, if you rely on your emotion, you get angry and maybe yell at the other driver or even flash him the finger or worse. However, if you knew that his kid has been sick and kept him up most of the night, he'd had an argument with his wife before leaving home, he was late for work, and he had a boss who easily got upset, would you still be angry with him? I think probably not. You might think he should be more careful, but you might even slow right down so that he has lots of space to get into your lane and go on his way. When we don't think about the situation, it is easy for anger to overtake us. But if we could realize the conditions that make the situation up, it may be much more difficult for anger to arise. So implicit here is the suggestion that we don't take situations at their face value, but try to understand that everything comes to be through conditions we mostly know nothing about. Just realizing this helps to neutralize the negative emotion that causes us to get so upset. You might come back with the argument, however, that an inanimate object, of course, has no desire to harm, whereas a human aggressor, unlike a tree branch, is after all an accountable agent, and a person's actions cannot be defined simply in terms of other factors, as a mere interplay of impersonal forces. There must surely be a real intentional object to resent, namely, the aggressor himself, or to put it another way, the self of the aggressor. Shantideva answers such an objection by examining this proposed self of the aggressor. He bases his argument on the theory of such an independent self as it was proposed by some Indian schools of thought of his time, but we can equally apply his argument to any Western system of thought that says a real self exists independent of everything else, like a person or soul that is permanent and independent. Shantideva points out that if such a self existed, it would never experience or be affected by temporary emotional states like anger, because if anger did affect it, it would have to experience change, which contradicts its independent or permanent nature. He also implicitly addresses the notion of an independent and permanent creator God, showing how such a thing defies all logic. And now you're going to have to listen carefully, because the argument may seem a little convoluted. Shantideva says, that which is referred to as the primal substance, that which is labeled as the self, do not come into being thinking, this is how I will arise. Here Shantideva is refuting the Indian Samkhya school of thought, which posits an underlying, eternal, independent, permanent, and absolute primal substance, Prakriti, from which everything arises. Perhaps you might think of it of a kind of like absolute God, and the Nyayika school, which posits a self that is independent and permanent. In this verse, he's saying that it's impossible that either the primal substance or the self, which are not produced, in other words, they do not rely for their existence on something else, will give rise to the intention to come into being as a harmful thing. How can something that is not yet in existence have the intention to come into existence in any way whatsoever, never mind to cause harm? The very fact that it is independent, so not arising from something else, stops it from having any sort of existence before it comes into existence, and so it is impossible that it has any kind of intention before coming into being. Confused? He goes on to explain, that which is not manifest is not yet there, so what could want to come to be? And permanently drawn towards its object, it can never cease from being so. Now, if the primal substance or self was a permanent, independent thing, by its very nature, It could not give rise to anything that did not already exist. So how can it give rise to an intention of aggression? And if it is permanent, it could never change from one state to another by very definition. In whatever way an independent permanent self or primal substance regards an object, it must always regard it like that. As it is permanent and doesn't depend on anything else, it will always experience an object the same way. So if the self of the other person is angry with us now, it must have been angry in all its previous relations with us and will continue to be so without break until one of us disappears. And all that obviously does not make sense. Shantideva goes on, indeed, this self, if permanent, is certainly impassable, that means devoid of action, like space itself. And should it meet with other factors, how should they affect it, since it is unchanging? If something is permanent, it cannot instigate any action, since it cannot change. It cannot create, it cannot destroy, it cannot do anything. Well, think about it. To create anything, a being must change. The very act of creation means change in the creator. Also, when such a being comes into contact with other factors, they cannot affect it at all, since by definition it cannot change. If they could affect it, it would mean that it would have to change, and so it cannot be permanent, nor would it be independent, because it changes depending on other factors. If when things occur, it stays unchanged and as before, what influence has action had on it? They say this affects the self, but what connection could there be between them? Verses 29 and 30 refer specifically to the Nyaya Vaisheshika view that this permanent, independent self is knowable and relates to mind and so on, as is affected by what happens and so on. It identifies the experiences of body and mind as its own. This again is similar to some Western views of a soul that is permanent, but which is affected by what the person does. A simple scenario posits that the soul is a permanent thing created by God, which is affected by the way the person chooses to live his or her life, and which is duly judged and goes to a permanent punishment or reward after death, according to the choices the person made. But Shantideva says, if this soul or self is permanent, how could it be affected by anything? Never mind taking on new experiences as its own. In fact, there couldn't be a connection between the experiences and the self at all. By very definition, the self as a permanent thing cannot be affected by anything, since then it would be subject to change and dependent on other factors for that change to occur. Shantideva goes on, all things depend on something else. On this depends the fact that none are independent. Knowing this, we will not be annoyed at objects that resemble magical appearances. And so Shantideva refutes the notion that a permanent, independent self that defines the aggressor could exist. The aggressor is a dependent, impermanent being, subject to all sorts of conditions and factors, some of which will come together in an expression of anger. This is a most important point, as the whole Buddhist philosophy rests on dependent origination. Things only arise dependent on other things. His Holiness calls this the doctrine of universal causality, or causation. In the great master Asanga's text, Compendium of Knowledge, it states that this doctrine has three characteristics. Firstly, there is no autonomous creator. Therefore, everything depends on causes. If the causes exist, the results will arise. So there is no design. Secondly, anything that is a cause is impermanent. A permanent phenomena cannot produce anything. Thirdly, a unique relationship exists between cause and effect. So, for instance, an apple tree cannot give rise to plums. This, of course, is crucial to any discussion of karma. It is not possible for a virtuous cause to give rise to a suffering result, as it is impossible for a non-virtuous cause to give rise to happiness. If you steal, you might get some temporary benefit, but the long-term result of that stealing will definitely be suffering. His Holiness points out that two types of causes exist. Substantial causes, for instance, the seed that gave rise to the sprout, and contributory causes, which in our example of a sprout would be the moisture, warmth, fertilizer, and so on that allowed the sprout to grow from the seed. He also says we have to understand that Shantideva agreed with a Prasangika Madhyamika point of view. Now, basically, there are four schools of Buddhism, each with an explanation of how things exist. The Prasangika Madhyamika has the most subtle explanation and is regarded in Tibetan Buddhism as the highest school. It was clearly explained by Nagarjuna and Chandrakirti. Although the Buddha taught the explanations of the other schools, he taught them to people with less sharp faculties than his most brilliant disciples, because at their stage of development, they needed explanations more in accord with their faculties and dispositions. So in accordance with the Prasangika Madhyamika school, if things don't have their own inherent existence and are totally dependent on other factors, they therefore appear like illusions created by a magician. Although they seem to us to have their own inherent existence and characteristics, they do not, and so are like a magician's illusions, which have no objective status of their own and are dependent on the whim and expertise of the magician. Thus, says His Holiness, it is unreasonable to respond with extreme emotions to things that arise helplessly according to other conditions and factors. As with the example of the car that cuts us off, so often when someone does something we don't like, we take it as a personal affront and get angry, not seeing all the conditions and factors which led to that person's action. We only see what is in front of our faces and react to that, which, as His Holiness points out, is a very limited and harmful way of reacting. If we could see all the factors that went into forming the situation, we would have a much bigger picture and be able to take a much better response. However, in verse 32, an objection is raised to this assertion that all things are like an illusion. Resistance, you may say, is out of place, for what will be opposed by whom? The stream of suffering is cut through by patience. There's nothing inappropriate in wanting that. The objection is that if everything is like an apparition, who exists to restrain what anger? The person's not real, and the anger's also not real. So why bother restraining and controlling anger? The answer, which comes in the last two lines of the verse, is that although phenomena are like illusions, conventionally we still experience suffering as a reality. So it's quite appropriate to practice patience, as that is what frees us from that suffering. For instance, if I'm accosted in the street one day by a man high on P who tries to mug me, it would be silly for me to stand there saying, "Oh, I don't have to worry about this. It's just all an illusion. It's not real at all." I might still be saying that with no teeth left in my head by the time he was finished with me. And with that, I must leave you, for we have run out of time. Thanks for being with us today, and please return again next week. Before we go, please dedicate any positive energy from the program to attaining enlightenment to be of greatest benefit to all beings. Thank you, and goodbye. This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association. Respectful. Beneficial. Empowering.